Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line.
Woohoo! Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 397, coming to you here on Wednesday, January 6th. We're going to look back at the latest in USC football, including departures, arrivals, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, Omni, wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our bonus episodes are on Patreon, patreon.com/Rain of Troy. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansided.com. And our phone number is 213-373-1USC.
Suck it, what's Bruin Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo. Join along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. It is the new era of Rain of Troy that has begun today.
It's a new era, new digs on the internet. It's exciting.
Yeah. If you go over to rainoftroy.com, you will see a new rainoftroy.com. We have transitioned to a new platform, super pumped to be with our Minute Media brethren, and excited for what it means for Fansided as a whole, and really for the future of the sites and everything. And this coincides with us getting ready to sit here today and announce our off-season plan.
Or as you know, the saying goes, the best laid plans of mice and men often go astray.
But we can at least give our
plan. We can
plan
at least plan. We're going to try to plan.
Try to stick to it.
And see if 2020 is nicer at letting us try to, you know, execute that plan instead of throwing global pandemics and all sorts of other stuff at us.
We will see. But the plan as of now, if you're wondering what's going to go on with the show during the off season, we are moving to Tuesdays starting it next week. Look for us to have the full main shows on Tuesdays, and then over on Patreon, every other Friday, starting next Friday, we're going to have bonus episodes on Patreon. Patreon.com/Rain of Troy is where you can join us for all of our bonus content for as little as $5.55 per month. Those bonus shows include trivia shows like Only Skinect. They include our shows with Jake Merrifield, titled Takes with Jake. And so much more. So many more things we do over on Patreon. Every other Friday, that is the plan. But it doesn't include things like Breaking News Pods or Alicia's solo podcast, whenever those go down. Those will be on top of everything. But what we're locking in is that every other Friday, Alicia and I will have a bonus episode featuring the both of us.
Yeah, good stuff. We always have good conversations, regardless of the topic, whether we're quizzing each other in trivia or going over past USC history stuff or whatever it is that the Rapots want to hear about. So looking forward to another year with the Patreon and with the podcast.
Yeah. Patreon.com/Rain of Troy is where you can join us. And we also wanted to take a minute here to give a shout out to Gabe8806, who left us a review over at Apple Podcasts. Gabe8806 says, thumbs up, 5 stars. These two constantly produce on-point, consistent USC Trojans athletic coverage. Good job, Michael and Alicia.
Yeah, thank you so much for the review. We always love reviews, love the 5 stars, and love to hear from you folks who listen to remind us that we're doing okay over here. Sometimes you need encouragement, so much, much, much appreciated.
Yes, indeed. Head over to Apple Podcasts. Help us grow the show by leaving a review. 5 stars, and we will be your best friends forever, basically. But Alicia, there's so much news to get to. Let's get up to that now. Off-season has just begun, but the beginning of the off-season means lots of people going and coming, and it all starts with Clay Helton giving the axe to old Tim Drevno, USC's offensive line coach, and not renewing the contract of strength and conditioning coordinator Aaron Osmus. Alicia, this means that the only positions not fired under Clay Helton are quarterbacks and running backs coaches. Since he became the full-time head coach in 2015.
They call this rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, maybe?
That is the phrase. It's going around, yeah.
I've used the phrase myself. I'm not going to, you know, shed any particular tears for Tim Drevno not being USC's offensive line coach anymore. I don't know that he was put in position to succeed, but he certainly didn't succeed. And it was very frustrating watching USC's offensive line over the last few years. But just like my thoughts about where USC goes with or without Clay Helton have changed over the last couple of years, just based on the way that things have progressed, I have seen USC fire too many offensive line coaches and sat back and hoped that the next one would make the difference, and none of them have. To look at this and think this is the move that's going to make it happen. You know, back in 2018, that was two, three years ago now, we looked at what USC was trying to do as far as the reset that Notre Dame was able to do and then move forward from there. USC is 2 years from that, 3 years from that, and they're still doing the basic steps that they should have done from the get-go with those kinds of things. You can't reset it 3, 4, 5 times and tell me you're still on that one, you know, on one reset. It's very frustrating. Like I said, I think USC could find somebody who is at least as good as Tim Drevno, if not better. But at this point, what even is the point? He was about to go into year three of his guys being in his system, and you pull the plug just to reset it to have another new year of growing pains?
Well, see, I look at it a couple different ways. Number one, in a vacuum, yeah, you absolutely go and change your offensive line coach. Tim Drevno, I think this is the perfect time because, like you said, I don't think that Tim Drevno is put in a place to succeed here. The scheme is not what he thrives in. And so I feel bad for him in that sense. But SC's got to get some better production out of their offensive line. They've got to get a blocking scheme that works and find something that is able to work with the offense that USC is trying to run. Because clearly what they have is broken. It does not work. And if you can go out there and find someone who fits into the scheme, great. That could be the little thing that unlocks the potential for this offense going forward. But yeah, I agree with you in the general sense that SC is never going to take the next step forward until they change the head coach. So what's the point? But doesn't that discredit the moment in time that USC is in right now? You look at this offensive line, and we've been talking about USC's three-star offensive line for a while now. Multiple recruiting classes. SC has been acquiring these offensive linemen that are not at the level that USC is accustomed of recruiting. A lot of them are sized differently, tall, lanky guys, so many of them from Texas, right, that kind of fit a different style. This is the opportunity going into 2021 for those guys to get on the field, because what you've had for so long is Elijah Vera Tucker and Andrew Voorhees and Jalen McKenzie and all these dudes that have been around the program for years and years and years. Those guys are graduating. Those guys are going to the NFL. There is going to be a big turnover starting this season.
I don't know, though, because 4 of the 5 are probably coming back. So maybe you're at 3 of the 5, but it's not like this new coach is going
to... As of now, but things are changing. And you're one injury away from having to bring on 2 or 3 guys, whatever
right,
it is.
Right, right. But those were guys that were recruited by Tim Drevno to fit what he wanted to do. And...
scheme that he wasn't signed up for.
Well, but he did sign up for it. He wasn't familiar with as much, but it just, again, it just feels like pulling the plug on the wrong piece of the machinery. If you're unhappy with the way that
But if you're Clay Helton and you're going to stay, you're not just going to sit here and do nothing. This is absolutely the move that you make.
How do I phrase this?
I know everyone wants Clay Helton gone, but like, if you're Clay Helton, you can't just sit on your hands. What other move is there to make?
Okay, okay. Bear with me here, folks, because I'm not trying to start anything with this, especially since I have called for them to move on from Tim Drevno, and so I get it. I'm not, like I said, I'm not against this move, but to play devil's advocate, USC just went 5-1, lost to Oregon on a Friday night when they had limited roster available, guys injured, blah, 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 all the excuses that USC wanted to throw out there after that loss. Why couldn't Clay Helton sit back and say, I don't need to make any changes? Why couldn't Clay Helton just move forward with, you know what, we're going to go ahead and get better this next year?
Because when you set the expectation, which we talked about ad nauseum, that it was a misguided expectation, but when you came out here and said, we need to run for 170 rushing yards per game because that's what's going to make us a championship team. When you come out here and say that and rush for 5 against Washington State, something is broken. You can sit there. Then the only recourse is to say, we put a goal on it. We didn't make it. Of course you're going to change the thing. I agree with you that if you can look at it and say, well, we got so close. What else is there to do and not make wholesale changes? I agree, but I don't think an offensive line coach is a wholesale change. It's the minute change here that could make a big difference. Now, I'm not saying that SC is going to go out and hire the perfect offensive line coach and suddenly be able to run the football and all that. My expectations are nowhere near that at all. I would never hold my breath on that at all. But I just think that, like, people get frustrated about Clay Helton for not firing T. Martin after 2017, for not making changes after 2017, a year in which he won a conference title and lost a Cotton Bowl. And yet we're sitting here after a Pac-12 championship loss to Oregon in which they got obliterated in the trenches. And we're going to say, well, yeah, but he shouldn't be changing the offensive line coach. Like, no, of course he should be.
Well,
like,
and again, I'm not saying he shouldn't change the offensive line coach. I'm just shrugging my shoulders at the futility of it all because, yeah, it might make a little bit of a difference this coming year if USC makes the right hire, which, by the way, we don't know that they will. I just worry that this is the kind of thing that's just going to lengthen the leash again and kick the can down the line again, because will the excuse coming out of 2021 be, well, the offensive line got a little bit better, and look what they might become in 2022 if you give this offensive line coach another chance.
You don't make that excuse about an offensive line coach. You don't. About a coordinator, you might. About an offensive line coach, you don't.
All right. Then in 2021, they determine that maybe Graham Harrell is the problem, nix him, and then decide, you know, well, okay, with a new offensive coordinator, blah, blah, blah.
You are so downtrodden.
I am.
You are so, you've got battered wife syndrome.
I am.
With this program.
I do. I don't know. There is no, there. And I don't want to be that person that's like damning USC if they do and damning USC if they don't. But also, like, that's how I feel. Like, that's where I'm at right now, where I look at both sides of the argument and just go, like, this is neither of these paths are a good idea. There's a middle path that they missed.
Yeah. And the way I look at it in general is this going to fix anything? Probably not.
Now, if USC goes out and hires Bill Beedenbo, then we're having a different conversation right now.
Sure, but the way I look at it, in general, is this going to change anything? Probably not. I don't have high expectations. But if you're Clay Helton, obviously you're making this move, obviously. And with Aaron Osmus, this is where I always say that I know nothing about strength and conditioning, and I'd have nobody in their right mind knows how to truly gauge a strength and conditioning coach unless that is something that you know. Deep down, I am never going to subscribe to the, oh, lack of physicality is the strength and conditioning coordinator's fault, or injuries is the strength and conditioning coordinator's fault. I think that's so easy to say from the outside. I don't know that SC had an overwhelming amount of trouble in both of those areas this year. I thought they if anything, they made strides in those areas. But shrug, I got nothing.
I'm with you. I genuinely cannot tell you if Aaron Osmus did a good job or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't even know where to start looking as far as USC finding another strength coach. They're out there.
But I will say that if to go with my argument that if you're Clay Helton, of course you're going to try something. A strength and conditioning coach is not a bad place to try to do something.
No, not at all.
It's basically a free move, right?
I guess the problem is a lot of times you hear strength and conditioning coaches being linked to culture.
Right.
And USC beat its chest about how good their culture was this past year. So, like, I guess the honest question I would ask Clay Helton and company is, what is it about Aaron Osmus that wasn't good enough, and what are you targeting as far as the change is concerned? Because, like you and I said, like, it's so hard to gauge which parts of the team's success or failures are linked back to strength and conditioning. But I don't know. Could this be Mike Bone coming in and saying, you have unlimited resources, go find somebody big?
It could be. I mean, we know that this is a contract at a date not being renewed. So maybe if he still had another year in his contract, it'd be a different story. I don't know. I look at the entire picture of this, and I do see humor in the sense that Clay Helton hired Tim Drevno back, and he hired Aaron Osmus back, two guys that were on this staff earlier in the decade, and they did not work out. The retread model did not work out at USC.
No, not at all. Shock. Yeah. Well, we called it, though, back when it happened, that it was a half measure with what USC was doing. When Notre Dame did their changes, they changed literally everybody but the guy on top.
Right.
And USC didn't do that. They did half measures, and they've continued to do half measures for the better part of the last couple of years. So,
how much do you love it now that you've seen Breaking Bad that you can use a term like half measure?
I use half measures all the damn time.
It's great.
I probably overuse it, but Mike is my favorite character from Breaking Bad, and he hit the nail on the head with that speech.
Yes, indeed. Other coaching news, Dante Williams is now the associate head coach. Alicia, what does this mean? It's very simple, but what does it mean?
I mean, it means that USC is not letting him walk away without a fight, which is a very, very good sign. And again, I'm going to end up being known as a Mike Bone shill, but seriously, the amount of abuse this guy gets unfairly, in my opinion, on a lot of things, the moves he has made outside of the one that everyone wants to see happen, outside of all of that, he's done things right. And naming Dante, giving USC the resources to go out and get Dante Williams was a big one, but also taking the step to lock him in, that's huge. That's proactive. That's exactly what you want to see from your administration. So kudos to USC for getting that done.
Yeah. He's been great on the recruiting trail. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. And that's what you do. You put more money behind him. The promotion is all about money. That's all it is. And more power to him. He's done a great job for USC thus far in the last year. Last coaching news thing to discuss before we talk about players. Graham Harrell is now interviewing for the head coaching job at Boise State. We know that the Broncos are looking for a new head coach after Brian Harsin has headed to the Plains to be the new Auburn Tigers head coach.
Yeah, this one's interesting. The reporting from Football Scoop is pointing towards Oregon's Andy Avalos and Montana's head coach, whose name I am forgetting at this moment, as the favorites to take over that job. But Graham Harrell, it sounds like he's going to get an interview. And what's interesting to me is less the likelihood of him ending up at Boise State, but more he's out there looking to get interviews. And I don't think that there are too many head coaching opportunities out there at the level that he'd be sort of looking this cycle, but that can change really quickly. One domino falls, and we're going to see a lot of movement that we weren't necessarily expecting in the coaching carousel this year. So something to keep an eye on for the rest of January. But the thing that's making me laugh the most is, like, a year ago, USC fans would have been freaking out about this possibility. And now we posted a tweet on Reign of Troy about it. And that tweet got ratioed by people calling for him to go take that. Like, thank God someone take him away. Like, wow, what are your makes?
I find it so funny how people ostracize coordinators.
Yeah.
Like I Graham Harrell, I think, has shown himself in the last 12 months. Well, you know, the last 2 months, I guess, of the football season, to have flaws. Absolutely. And in this renaissance of offense, this offensive explosion that's going around everywhere, so much of it based on the pass. And you got names like Sean McVay and Joe Brady and all these things and all these guys that have been linked to being key culprits of it, both at the NFL and the college level. I think that SC probably could do better than Graham Harrell. At the same point, I don't think that Graham Harrell is the horrible offensive coordinator that people are painting him out to be all of a sudden. And this is just because the offensive coordinator gets, fairly and unfairly, you know, the blame for everything. That's just how it works. That's how the offense works. And when SC has an offense that is surely capable of scoring 50 points and then never sniff 40, that's going to be the reaction.
Yeah, I mean, and I get that. I'm so very torn on Graham Harrell. This is what I was worried about when USC brought him in, as opposed to what USC was supposed to get from Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury had a wealth of experience as an offensive coordinator, as a play caller at the Power 5 level. And I thought that, you know, that was a no-brainer for that one. To stick with the air raid and go with someone unproven like Graham Harrell, I thought it was a good idea at the time, but you were going to have to deal with growing pains. And unfortunately, I think that's what USC has encountered here. You're seeing an offensive coordinator who doesn't have a ton of experience learning how to shift when something goes wrong or when things don't go to plan, or when opposing defenses start to figure you out. That is a problem for Graham Harrell. But like you said, he's not the worst offensive coordinator. USC averaged 33 points per game. Like, it's not like this was an utter disaster of a season offensively.
Right. Keaton Slovis had a, quote, bad year by so many different perspectives, and yet he was the first teamer in the Pac-12. He led the Pac-12 in, like, every passing stat, save for, like, quarterback rating, which was pretty down for him. But you don't get that by accident.
Yeah.
And I know that the air raid is, you know, puts a lot of precipice on the pass, but still, you don't get there by accident.
Well, you don't win five games by accident.
Right.
Keaton got USC there. He did the job. He wasn't great all the time, and Lord knows that we talked about it. But he was just okay. USC needs him to be more than just okay.
Right.
USC needs this offensive coordinator to be more than just okay.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why people are rightly frustrated. USC needs to have a rushing attack that averages more than 100 yards a game. They didn't this year. That is absolutely.
Hold on. No, they need to have a rushing attack that is capable of being successful.
Okay. Yes.
It doesn't matter how many
but
yards they run for.
A successful rushing attack that runs the ball as often as USC did should have more than 100 yards per game.
Yes.
So that's just, you know, metrics we can debate whatever, which way that we want. But the fact of the matter is that USC's ground game was not effective enough, particularly on the ground, but across the board, they weren't good enough. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with the physical side of it. A lot of it had to do the scheme side of it, the play calling side of it, all of the above. And that was Tim Drevno's responsibility as USC's run game coordinator. So maybe Harrell benefits from a new offensive line coach, a new run game coordinator as a result. Maybe that's the thing that changes things for Harrell, but I don't know. Like with everything with USC, like with the Drevno conversation and all of that, does any of this matter in the end?
You are just so downtrodden.
I'm sorry.
Jeez. And we haven't even talked about USC's departures yet, in terms of personnel, players. Let's do that. Alicia, we have talked about this forever. The fear, if you want to call it that SC would go into 2021 and have lost everybody. I don't think it is a total catastrophe yet, but man, SC is having quite the purge of talent based on the NFL draft. Amon-Ra St. Brown gone to the NFL. He finishes his USC career tied with Nelson Aguilar for 10th with 178 catches. Talano Hufanga, you might remember him for being the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year and an All-American. He has gone to the NFL. Elijah Vera Tucker, gone to the NFL. Tyler Vaughns, the third-ranked receiver in USC history with 222 catches. He has gone to the NFL. Elijah Griffin, another guy, gone to the NFL. Marlon Tuipulotu, gone from the NFL. And the first one who opted out of the season and went to the NFL was Jay Tufele. That is a hell of a lot of talent right there in those seven guys. All gone to the NFL, all not coming back. And I think it's fair to say that as it stands right now, SC doesn't have the talent to make up for all those guys immediately. But we're going to have to see what they can do in 2021.
Well, the real question I still have and word we're still waiting on is Isaiah Polamau. And honestly,
yeah.
USC's defense weirdly like could really use him coming back.
For sure.
Because then you go into 2021 with Isaiah Polamau as your sort of foundational piece in that secondary. You're bringing in Xavion Alford from Texas. And you have the guys behind, the guys recruits that you've brought in, who you can then maybe cycle through with alongside him. But if you're having to start fresh at safety across the board, also replacing Elijah Griffin in that secondary, that's tough without even beginning to talk about Marlon Tuipulotu and Jay Tufele as guys that USC really could have used as well.
Yeah, I think the doomsday scenario for SC is not quite there yet. The doomsday scenario, I think, would be losing IPM, losing another linebacker, either to the transfer portal or to the NFL.
Or corner.
Another corner, losing another offensive lineman, like someone like Jalen McKenzie, maybe, mm-hmm. Or if Brett Nealon wanted to go, or what have you. I think that would be the ultimate doomsday scenario for USC. They aren't quite there yet. Having IPM for the moment is huge.
Yeah.
But still, it is pretty damning for SC when you look at all the talent gone, because I think that ideally SC would have hoped that they would have been able to keep Marlon Tuipulotu. They could have hoped that they would have been able to keep Elijah Griffin, or maybe on some weird level, keep Tyler Vaughns. And if they would have kept those guys along with IPM and along with everybody else who could go, you'd feel more comfortable about 2021. But alas, that's not the case. And when you include the transfer portal departures, then it really starts to look kind of worrisome for USC in 2021 with Marquis Stepp going, Connor Murphy. We already know about Polye Nateote, Abdullah Malik McLean. Muneer McLean was suspended this past season, but not in the transfer portal officially. Not that we know of, but we can assume that he's not going to be back, right? So there's a lot of guys there that SC, despite, you know, having talent on the roster 24/7, they're going to have to make up for those guys. Luckily, they are putting together one of the best classes in years. I don't know what that means, given how poorly rated USC's class was last year and the year before, but the recruiting side of things is at least holding their own, despite the departures.
Well, and that's the key to everything for USC, isn't it? It's you have to have made up for the dip in the class of 2020. You have to have made up for that somewhere, and you need to do that in the class of 2021, which so far USC has managed to do. In most areas, maybe we talk about offensive line still being a concern as recruiting, but they've been able to bring in a really, really spectacular class this year that's going to make up somewhat for the departures that are in place. Now, USC is probably going to have to use more young guys than you would ideally use, but despite the sort of perception of USC's roster talent really taking a dip, I'm not sure it's that extreme yet in terms of the guys that USC will have available.
Yeah, for sure. It could be worse, which I think is a good thing for USC, but still worrisome given all the departures that SC has had. Now, the good news is you mentioned the recruiting class. SC gets the second highest rated recruit in the history of the program, signing Corey Foreman, the number one recruit in the 24/7 Sports Composite, 6'4", 265 pounds out of Corona Centennial, a defensive end, by all accounts, a generational type talent that SC has at their disposal now at defensive end. That is huge. Sierra Wright has committed to USC, the number 77 overall recruit in the 24/7 Sports Composite out of Loyola as a corner. Those are two huge gets. And if SC is going to be successful in 2021 and going forward, it's going to be that the incoming freshmen are able to have an impact to make up for three things. A, all the departures that SC is losing out of this team that had all the talent in the world to be a playoff team, right? And to make up for the recruiting class from last year, and to just be able to go in and get all those reps. Those are three things that SC needs to figure out a way to do for 2021. And this recruiting class is how you do it. I think my worry about this recruiting class is the big wins are not necessarily at the positions of the most need. Right. That's kind of worrisome.
Right. Well, okay. Sarah Wright is potentially a plug-and-play replacement for Elijah Griffin. Sure. Potentially. Yeah. If he can do the Chris Steele thing, then that's a really, really good sign, really helpful for what USC needs. I guess the concern around Corey Foreman, like you said, potentially a generational talent, but his position is probably Drake Jackson's position. So it's not like he's going to come in and play one of those big spots that USC's losing an all Pac-12 kind of player.
Right.
So
if you could choose, you'd have that number one overall recruit replace Hufanga or replace AVT on the offensive
yes.
line, right?
I mean, if USC, and this is the failing of USC recruiting over the last few years, if USC had the five-star offensive lineman, that would be absolutely massive. But USC doesn't have the five-star offensive linemen. They have some good offensive linemen, potentially, some projects and some potential diamonds in the rough, and we'll see how those guys do.
Right.
But they don't have, like, Tristan Lee. They don't have that big offensive line.
And by the way, this isn't to say that, you know, signing Corey Foreman is a bummer.
Oh, no, no, no.
Like, no, you absolutely take him any day of the week.
Oh, you find a way to work him into that defense.
And, you know, having him on this defense along with Drake Jackson, a guy that he looks up to, as an older player from Corona Centennial, is a great problem to have.
Yes.
Wonderful problem to have to figure out how to get those guys on the field at the same time.
Yes, and to be able to know that coming into this year, Drake Jackson is probably going to leave after 2021, and then you're going to get a couple of years of Corey Foreman coming on the back of that. So this is the future of the program, not just 2021, but 2022 and 2023, that you're really setting yourself up for very well in that particular spot. It's just that you have some holes that are in the other areas that you do still need to plug. You know, USC has brought in a couple really promising looking quarterbacks. That's great to have. But, you know, where are your tackles, where are your guards that you are going to be able to look at and say that's a future first round pick. That's a definite, you know, 2 or 3 year starter. It's harder to see those guys and it's a wait and see on who USC has. But as far as closing out a class, I think USC is doing a hell of a job here, and they're not done yet either. They are still very much in the race for Rajon Davis, the outside linebacker from Mater Dei. So they could be getting even better talent-wise on that defense to help make up for any other deficiencies that they have. This is why I continue to say that as bad as it gets for USC, they're still in a pretty decent position, regardless of who the head coach is.
Right. There's still plenty of talent, despite the last year.
This roster should still compete for the Pac-12. Like, right. At worst, that's what they should compete
it's
for.
It's a dip in talent based compared to last year.
Just based on timing of all these guys being drafted.
But it's not like all of a sudden you're being having to go out there with like Oregon State's roster or whatever.
Yeah, no, they still got tons of talent out there. So, and particularly, you still got wide receivers, you still got your quarterback. You just got to sort of find a way to get through this 2021 season where you're maybe going to see a significant step back in a couple of spots. But then again, I worry less about the defensive line because of what we saw from the guys that were developed under Vic Sooto. And maybe we'll see a Marlon Tuipulotu like jump going forward.
Yeah, for someone else. And that leads us into a key question that I have, which is, what do you expect from this team in 2021? I think that the 2021 season is obviously going to be another championship or bust season for Clay Helton. We know that. That's the elephant in the room. We all know this. Let's just put that aside for 1 second, because that can derail literally any conversation we have about this team. Oh, but Clay Helton, obviously, we know that. Deep breath, let's talk about this at a different level, right? In a vacuum, regardless of that, independence of Clay Helton, what should we expect out of this 2021 team? When you look at all the guys that are gone, all the talent on this team that is gone, all the guys that are coming in, your Corey Foreman is a freshman Corey Foreman, transfers, Xavier Alford, Ishmael Sofstra, out of Alabama. What do you make of the 2021 season? What do you expect out of these guys?
Like I said, the roster should still compete for the Pac-12. I don't think you can concede the South to ASU or UCLA yet. Certainly shouldn't. You have the defensive tackle coming from Alabama who, if he is the talent that he seemed to be when he was a recruit, and if Vic Sooto can get out of him what he managed to get out of Marlon Tuipulotu, then you've got a good starting point on that defensive line. You're probably, we assume USC's bringing back Nick Figueroa and Caleb Tremblay. I mean, they both could leave for the NFL if they wanted. I just don't see that happening. So I think that you have some pieces there to work with. It's just really that age-old question of, can USC develop these guys and have them fit the defense and have everyone learn the defense and know their jobs and the offense know their jobs and get their job done? That's just easier said than done, right?
Yeah, you mentioned timing. I think that that's the key here because I look at this roster. I do not think that this team can win a Pac-12 championship. In terms of the talent, like, yes, and how it compares to everything.
I guess my question is,
surely it could, obviously.
Yeah, but are you going to put your faith in Oregon or Washington to be that good that we look at it and say USC can't win the Pac-12?
For the most part.
Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet.
It's not that SC couldn't. It's what do I expect
them?
Will they?
No. Oh, yeah. No. That, we're on the same page there, you know, will they? Like, because this team's going to underperform again. So
let's look at the 2021 schedule. SC gets at home San Jose State, Arizona, Oregon State, Stanford, UCLA, Utah, and BYU. Not a bad home slate. On the road, Notre Dame, ASU, Cal, Colorado, Washington State. Their two key misses are Oregon and Washington in conference. I think missing those two teams is going to be huge, possibly the difference for the South. SC wins the South again, especially when they get Utah at home. It's a little bit easier to beat Utah at home than it is at Rice-Eccles in front of the Muss, which we know that SC did this past year. I think the schedule, especially in conference, is favorable. There's no reason why SC can't win the South. I can't see them getting any further than that. And the reason is because I think the timing is all off. You look at the freshmen, they're going to be coming in, and I think they're going to be too young compared to the other talent on this team. And I think that the unfortunate part is, I think this team is going to be a year away. In 2022, I could absolutely see that being the time. Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be gone from Oregon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like things are going to be a little bit settled in that way. I think Oregon's dominance up front might be a little bit taken back by that point. Who knows? We'll see. Obviously, they're going to reload. But you look at what SC has in 2021, Drake London and Drake Jackson, the two Drakes, Keaton Slovis. Those guys are all draft eligible. If they all leave after 2021, those are three big spots to replace. And I don't know if they're going to be able to necessarily do it as easily going into 2022, even with Corey Foreman on the roster. You know, like in a perfect world, you do. You have those guys at the same age as all these guys, these guys coming up in 21.
Well, but this is college football, right? Like the cycle.
These are the problems that you have. And this is why the 2020 team was the ultimate chance, right? Because you had the Drakes and Keaton Slovis being the young guys, the young studs.
And the Amon-Ra's and the Vaughns.
And all the veterans, yeah.
And ABT and all that. Yeah, for sure. But that's the ebbs and flows of college football and recruiting and all of that kind of stuff. And this is why it's so important to get to the point where, you know, like Bama's ebbs and flows are the difference between winning the title and getting knocked out in the semifinal of the playoff. Like, that's their ebb.
Right.
You know, Ohio State's ebb and flow is getting into the playoff and winning the playoff versus, you know, maybe having one too many losses to
going 10-2.
You know, being number five. Right. You know, USC's ebbs and flows, they need to narrow it down. It can't be, you know, 10-2 and winning the Pac-12 versus, you know, 5-7. It just can't be that kind of ebb and flow. So right. So I agree with you that you might experience a little bit of an ebb. But if USC is doing their job, if the coaches are doing their job, if the program is in a healthy state, then the ebb should still be, you know, 9-win season.
It should be. I think there's a lot of shoulds. I think SC is absolutely going to take a step back. It's just a matter of what that step back looks like.
Yeah.
It could end up being that when you look at the schedule, just going to run through this really quick. Gut reaction, win or loss. San Jose State.
Win.
Arizona.
Win.
Oregon State.
Win.
Stanford.
Win.
UCLA.
Win.
Utah.
Win.
BYU.
Win.
Notre Dame.
Lose.
ASU.
ASU on the road, I'll give it a coin flip and give it the loss.
Cal.
Win.
Colorado.
I'll go win.
Washington State.
Win.
So, put that all together. Didn't you just say SC is going to go 11-1? Sorry, 10-2.
10-2, yeah. No.
See, I think surely if they did what they were supposed to, yes, you could see it. And in a perfect world, to make the Ohio State comparison, a down year for SC is winning the conference and finishing fifth in the polls and just missing the playoff, right?
Yeah.
But the more likely scenario is I think that SC ends up being sort of like an 8-4 team that still wins the division.
Right, but if USC goes 8-4 with this schedule, it is January 6, 2021, and I'm asking this question, is that a fireable offense?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's like, my thing.
Yes.
If it's 8-4, that's not good enough in this schedule.
Yes,
like obviously. I said, 10-2, I think that's reasonable. Maybe you're on the road against Notre Dame, and then you coin flip ASU and UCLA and maybe throw Utah and BYU in there as difficult matchups, but that's a 10-2 schedule. It's a 10-2 schedule.
Because I hate bringing this up because I know what's going to happen, but if you don't do one thing, you got to do the other. So I think that makes literally anything, any result outside of a national championship, doomsday for Clay.
Okay, so now that's fascinating because I would agree with the sentiment while also saying I cannot imagine a world where USC goes 10-2 and moves on from the head coach.
It's just
wild. I mean,
going 10-2 should be enough to keep your job. I don't know that
in this case.
Yeah. Now. Again, we could be completely fooled at, you know, surely they've got to fire him now, right? Like, surely you'd have that conversation. But, like, the alternative is extending him at that point. And I can't imagine extending him being the better option. You know? I'm just saying.
Hmm.
All right, we got a big mailbag. Let's get to it.
You've got mail.
All right, Lizzie, let's start with a voicemail we got from Scott in Memphis.
Michael, Alicia, this is Scott from Memphis. I just don't really call as much. I'm sorry. Been a real busy. It's Tuesday, the 29th, and I was looking at ESPN and seeing what games are going to be played, and lo and behold, there's Colorado, Texas. And it just got me thinking, USC, not one to play a bowl game. Let me explain something. Your significant other suddenly breaks up with you and decides they're going to marry your best friend. And you had a trip planned to Europe and you just don't want to do it. And you have two options. You suck it up and you go to Europe, and lo and behold, you may meet somebody, or you may have a great time. Or you can sit in your room, pull the blinds down, and munch on Xanax. And when USC decided they weren't going to go bowling, I thought that was more due to the fact that they didn't win the Pac-12 and they were all upset and kicking the can. And it was due to that more so than, well, we want our kids to be home for the holidays. No one's going home for the holidays. No one's, I mean, please. I thought that was a cop-out. I thought it was weak. And it just says a lot of things about the USC program right now. So I just wanted your thoughts on that. If y'all end up having another, you know, simulcast and you're going to talk about things, I didn't hear y'all discuss that in the last one. Maybe I missed it. So anyway, I hope y'all are doing well. Fight on. And there's a lot going on that needs to be unpacked as far as the Pac-12 conference. And USC in general, just everything in general. So, and go Buffalo. I hope they beat Texas. Take care, guys. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Scott. Good to hear from you. And sadly for you, we know what happened to Colorado in that game against Texas. Not good. But I get the sentiment. I honestly do get it. I get where Scott is coming from here as far as wanting that competitive spirit to sort of be alive within USC, that they'll just go off and do whatever they need to do to go finish the season with a bowl game and all of that kind of stuff. But at the same time, as a human, I can't even use this as a judgment point for the state of USC's program, because we saw so many other teams who didn't lose in the Pac-12 title game also decide to opt out. And we've seen teams continue to deal with COVID. We know that USC was going to go into that game without most of the NFL guys that were going to declare. We know that AVT and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Keaton Slovis weren't going to play because of injury. We know that it was just, it's such a difficult time of year. You weren't going to get to do any of the fun stuff in the bowl because you weren't going to be able to go there and do all the events that you'd normally do in the city. Sure, maybe you would have gotten the PS5, which would have been awesome for the players. But at the same time, like, they literally were going to go home for Christmas. They've been living on USC's campus or around USC's campus for, several months. A lot of them haven't seen their families. So, yes, they were able to go home and live at home again after the season ended. So, like we've said before, I can't bother drumming up disappointment even over this, because this past year has been a whole separate thing that everyone's dealing with.
Yeah, and that's why for me, I don't mind it. In a different situation, I think I might have a different opinion. But why is it that the SEC gets to play the "they don't want to be here" card all the time? When they lose bowl games, Alabama loses bowl games. They just didn't want to be there. Why are they allowed to play that card, even though we're talking about nobody opted out of bowl games before this year, right? Yeah, you would have the occasional situation where a team like Notre Dame would not take their bowl invite, but that would always be rare when those things would happen. I don't see the big deal here. It's the pandemic. Given everything that's gone on, I'd rather have SC opt out of a bowl game than play a game they didn't want to be there. Have a game that has some ugly score that you didn't want to see. If SC's not going to be there, then don't go. But moving on, the email from John. Hi, Alicia and Michael. I hope you two are feeling better. I'm feeling pretty sad at how the season ended for USC football and its players. I realized that, as Alicia wrote, A.D. Bone is not going to fire one-loss Helton after the strange year the Pac-12 endured during the deadly COVID pandemic. However, had this been a normal planned season, I think USC would be 7-5, maybe even 6-6, and the pressure to move on from Helton would be very high on A.D. Mike Bone. Next season's USC team will not be as talented as this year's team due to expected departures and having to face up with a cycle that has its opponents in the South. Colorado, UCLA, and ASU are all entering. So here's a mental exercise from a parallel universe. Go through the original USC schedule below, and based on how each team actually performed this season, judge if USC would have won or lost the game. First and last are easy gimmies. Now, based on this record, do you think AD Mike Bone would have kept Coach Clay Helton? Really quick, running down this list like we did before. Alabama.
No.
New Mexico.
Yes.
Stanford.
Yes.
ASU.
They did, so yes.
At Utah.
They did, so yes.
Cal.
Yes.
At Arizona.
They did, so yes.
Colorado.
Yes.
At Oregon.
They didn't, so no.
Washington.
I think that's a no.
At UCLA.
They did, so yes.
Notre Dame.
No.
So you have SC at 8-4.
Although, to be quite honest, I think that the Notre Dame game would have probably been one of those stupid ones where, like, Notre Dame's on the verge of the playoff and USC is playing them tough and maybe they win, maybe they don't, but it's tight. But yeah, 8-4. I agree.
I think SC might clip Washington, but either way,
8-4, 9-3. It's the same thing.
It is the same Michael. Thing. Yes, but no, I agree with the premise that the season would have been looked at completely differently if those games would have been there.
And you have probably more reason to,
especially when the season starts against Alabama.
Yeah,
and who knows what that game could have been early on?
It would not have been pretty.
Yeah, if that was an ugly beatdown, then that would have set the tone for the entire season and potentially set the personality for what this team could have been this past season. We got a text message from our friend Kenny from Traveler Hates Thursdays. Michael and Lucy, your discussion on how you'd only trust Urban Meyer to compete with Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney is spot on when comparing the playoff era to the BCS era. But what caused the disparity between very elite programs and everyone else?
Management and how much they care about football and how much they can evaluate football. Nick Saban is the master of control, and he understands what excellence looks like. That's why he's so good. That's why he's suited to the college football world, where he gets to control everything and it put together in the perfectionist way that he'd want it. Dabo, it just turns out he's got a bit of talent, and he has, you know, what are the I was talking to somebody about this, like, Dabo. What are the chances that Dabo would end up with the best defensive coordinator in college football, and that defensive coordinator would be like the only one who doesn't appear to have aspirations to be a head coach and would stick around for that long? That helps. But, you know, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, LSU, these are programs that put a lot of resources into their football program. That matters.
Yeah, I think it's resources. It's spending wisely what the big uptick in TV revenue. But I also think so much of it is recruiting, and I don't think it's a surprise that Clemson's reign comes at a time where the recruiting geography is shifting. You get a state like Georgia now that is, it used to be the big three, California, Texas, and Florida. I don't think it's like the big three anymore. Georgia is just as talented as any of those other states. And when you're Clemson and you're on the border of South Carolina and Georgia, you're right there. You're right there for talent. And so that coinciding with the big name talent that's not on the offensive and defensive line in California, that hurts. But it's all about how you manage that talent, how you manage those coaches, and how you're able to recruit in a landscape that's ever changing. And it's crazy that so few programs have been able to sort of master it during this time. Let's go to an email from Scott. First 4 years of each coach: Clay Helton, 31-17, won a Rose Bowl. Tom Herman, 32-18, won a Sugar Bowl. Both have failed to get the historic programs to elite statuses. and both are losing out on the recruiting trail. The difference in the two coaches, Texas cares about the future of their program and fired their coach. Vida on Scott.
Bingo. Although, okay, one little smidge, big smidge of a difference. To my knowledge, Texas is not dealing with the wealth of lawsuits and all that, putting a financial strain on an institution that already was under financial strain, as USC's athletic department was. That makes a slight difference. And then you consider that the buyout for Clay Helton was even worse than the buyout for Tom Herman, all that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to it, yes, they care more.
Yeah,
that's it.
It doesn't help that SC has a million other things going on.
Yes.
If SC didn't have a million other things going on, Clay Helton would have been fired a long time ago.
Yes.
Slack message from Grumpyoso. Do you think Mike Bone is going to hire the new offensive line coach and strength and conditioning coaches?
I don't think he will directly do it, but if the last hiring situation came about the way that it did, I think that he will give resources to and maybe use his Rolodex and the like to help expand that search.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Last email comes from Ron. Alicia and Michael, thank you for your hard work, especially in a year of a pandemic. It was, maybe strangely, comforting to share podcasts with my daughter and son throughout the fall. Your broadcasts were a welcome consistency during a period where nothing is as we expect or wish. With prayers for your complete recovery and for all the best in the new year, best, Ron Harrington.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ron. That's very sweet of you. And we're glad to have been able to provide anybody even a slight distraction or something that that made you feel good during this last year, or just allowed you to vent along with us during this last year. I totally get that. We're both feeling quite a bit better. We're both looking forward to 2021. Being a little bit more stable, a little bit better, and you know, onwards and upwards, right?
Absolutely. And thank you for everybody that reached out to to us. I wouldn't have expected as much support as we got.
Yes.
Not because I doubted anyone, just you never think about those things, right? Mm-hmm. So thank you guys. We're definitely feeling way better. That's always good, and is very heartfelt to get so many messages, DMs, tweets, emails, all that stuff. So thank you guys very much. But we're back and ready to go for 2021. We'll be back on Tuesdays for the main show. Then every other Friday over on Patreon, patreon.com/RainofTroy. So we can get all of our bonus content for as little as $5.55 a month. There we go. 2 minutes. Both of us have meetings in 2 minutes. So we've been like running through this mailbag at rapid fire speed. Yeah. So thank you guys for listening as always. We still have a bunch more emails to get to. Look for those next week. So if you didn't hear an email, we'll get to those next week. Thank you guys for listening as always. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.